You're listening to CJSF Radio, Simon Fraser, 90.1 FM.
You are listening to CJSF 90.1 FM on your dial, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. And you are listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenery, professional engineer, professional futurist, and sometimes occasional sessional instructor of future studies at Simon Fraser University. And this is a weekly show that looks at future trends and issues and important items that affect your daily life and will be affecting your life into the future. Welcome to the show. We're continuing our look at the book Multipliers, How the Best Leaders Make Everyone Smarter by Liz Wiseman with Greg McKinnon and a foreword by Stephen Covey. Last show we were looking at multipliers, and specifically challengers. Subsection, how the challenger achieves resource leverage within an organization. Why do challengers get more from their resources? By playing the challenger instead of the know-it-all, they access more brains, get those brains working faster, and earn the full discretionary effort of their people. Once they have a clear view of latent opportunities and challengers, they understand that there are no resources worthy of waste. Wisdom tells them that it is imperative to engage all intelligence and capability in service of these opportunities. The following chart demonstrates why know-it-all leaves so much intelligence on the table, while challengers pull so much out of their people. Know-it-alls. What they do, give directives that showcase their knowledge. What they get, distracted efforts as people vie for the attention of the boss. Idle cycles in the organization as people wait to be told what to do or to see if the boss will change direction again. An organization that doesn't want to get ahead of the boss. In contrast, challengers, what they do, define opportunities that challenge people to go beyond what they know how to do now. What they get, collective intent towards the same overarching opportunities. Rapid cycles and accelerated problem solving without the initiation of the formal leader. People's discretionary effort and intellectual energy to take on the toughest organizational challenges. When leaders operate as challengers, teams are able to accelerate their performance. Because the organization does not have to wait for the leader to think of it first, they can solve tougher problems at an accelerated rate. Because people understand the context, they can act for themselves rather than wait to be told or approved. Consider the contrast in the impact that this diminisher and this multiplier had on the productivity and forward momentum of their organizations. A diminisher creates idle cycles. A highly intelligent vice president at a major global technology firm was accustomed to a fast-paced and demanding environment. He was a competitor in the market who never stopped challenging himself and others. However, after transferring to a division led by a classic know-it-all, he found himself idle most of the time. He said, quote, I spend most of my time waiting for my boss to make decisions. In the meantime, I can't do much else. I'm essentially working part-time. I'm bored, but I'm enjoying taking sailing lessons, unquote. This vice president was ready for high-speed battle, was relegated to easy, leisurely sailing. A multiplier creates rapid cycles. Barack, previously referenced, left a comfortable job to work as the CTO for Better Place, where his new CEO laid down the challenge for him before he even started work. Barack said, quote, I did more in 1 year at Better Place than I had done in 20 years at my previous company. I'm not a Gnat chart pusher. I can work extremely fast because I don't get punished for mistakes. I work in fast forward, unquote. Because they are encouraged to be smarter than the leader, people can stop competing for idea validation and instead commit themselves to the challenge. And the result is that intelligence grows individually and collectively. The collective intent built within the organization enables the whole group to break through challenges no single leader, however intelligent, could have had. The understanding leads to a key question. How does someone provide direction, like Better Place or Ray Lane at Oracle? How does someone go from a know-it-all to become a challenger? Becoming a challenger, a serious case of curiosity. Becoming a challenger starts the developing an overactive imagination and a serious case of curiosity. In our research, we analyzed how multipliers and diminishers were rated against 48 leadership practices. It is not surprising that the highest rated practice for multipliers was intellectual curiosity. Multipliers create genius in others because they are fundamentally curious and spark learning around them. This curiosity takes the form of an insatiable need for deep organizational understanding. The question why is at the core of their thinking. They ponder possibilities. They want to learn from people around them. At the heart of any challenge is intellectual curiosity. I wonder if we could do the impossible. How does one become more curious? 30 minutes watching, or in this case, walking with a young child will provide a good answer. I recall a particular walk with my young daughter, who was 3 years old at the time. It was one of those walks designed to relax both parent and child. But this particular walk managed to do the opposite. As we walked through the neighborhood, my daughter looked at everything and wanted to know why. She asked, why is this dog barking? And why is the road cracked? And why do cars go so fast? This continued for some time. The questions continued to get harder and harder, and I was running out of answers. I wondered how long this would go on. In an attempt to maintain my sanity and satisfy my own curiosity, I started counting the number of times my daughter asked why during our little walk. At the current rate, I thought she might break 25. I stopped counting at 80. When deeply rooted in a mindset of curiosity, one is ready to begin working as a challenger. Here are several starting points. The starting block. 1. Go extreme with questions. Most executives are barraged with questions, constantly responding to others seeking their opinion. The nature of the executive role makes it easy to stay rooted in answer mode and to be the boss. The first step in this journey is to stop answering questions and begin answering them instead, asking them instead. Several years ago, I was commiserating with a colleague at work, Brian Spoots, about how I had become horribly bossy with my children and I was frustrated. I detailed a typical evening at my house where I barked orders at my young children. Get ready for bed. Stop that. Put on your pajamas. Brush your teeth. Pick up your toys, etc., etc., etc. Brian was also a parent of young children and gave me some wise advice. He listened carefully and said, quote, Liz, I have a challenge for you. Tonight, when you go home, I want you to only speak to your children in the form of questions, no orders, no statements, just questions. I was naturally intrigued. He said, I think you might find that your children know exactly what they need to do. I agreed to take the challenge. He cautioned, only asking questions will feel awkward, but go all the way. Nothing but questions for at least an hour or two. That night, when it was time for bed, I asked my children, what time is it? They responded with bedtime. I then asked, what do we do at bedtime? They responded with, we get our pajamas and we brush our teeth. I continued the question routine with, well then, who is ready for bed? They scampered to get on their pajamas and brush their teeth. I stood in the hallway in shock. The rest of the evening proceeded in a similar fashion, with me asking them leading questions and them responding with remarkable understanding and eagerness to act. I reported this amazing experience to Brian the next day at work. He encouraged me to keep it up, not necessarily asking questions 100% of the time, but beginning to settle into a comfortable level of questioning. I did this and found that it transformed the way I operated as a parent, and is most certainly spilled over to how I managed at work. I've issued the same challenge to many leaders and have seen it transform their leadership as they shifted their balance, began asking more and telling less. It has helped them draw out intelligence of people around them and guide others through a challenge. Taking the extreme question challenge to shift from know-it-all into challenger mode. Start with 100%. Try it at home. You might find that your children, or housemates, depending, are good guinea pigs and good teachers. At work, take the first step by finding a meeting that you can lead solely with questions. You might be surprised at what the people around you already know. 2. Take a bus trip. University of Michigan professor Noel Tichy tells a story about an executive at GE who found a creative way to seed a challenge and help his organization see a need in the marketplace. When Tom Tilley took over the failing appliance division of GE, the division was losing money, slashing its workforce, and hadn't released a new product in years. Tom loaded 40 people from his management team into a rented bus and headed for the Atlanta Kitchen and Bath Show. The group was to find trends and needs and generate new product ideas that would keep the plant alive. The group developed a new line of products and turned around the division from a staggering loss to a $10 million profit. There are many ways to take a bus trip. Irene Fisher of the Beninian Center took people into the inner city so she could see the needs of the poor firsthand. As a corporate manager, you might visit a custom factory floor to watch how customers actually use your product. You can take your team down to a local mall and watch people shop. But go together on a bus trip. Help people see the need that must get met. Make it a learning experience that will reveal that need. Create energy and ignite the fire within your organization. 3. Take a massive baby step. The corporate world has a plethora of names for this. Create an early win, deliver a symbolic victory, and favorite. Pick the low-hanging fruit. But the problem is the most leaders don't do this only in isolation. They pick a small group to run a pilot, which catches the attention of management, but don't have the visibility to get the attention of the entire organization. Instead, do it en masse. Make it visible. Create a conference room pilot for a new technology and hold an open house. Win back an important customer through the efforts of cross-functional task force. Get the entire organization to take a small first step. But do it together, en masse, so everyone can see the results and start to believe that something great is possible. This belief is what will shift the weight of the organization out onto that high wire. A good stretch. Jimmy Carter said, quote, if you have a task to perform and are vitally interested in it, excited and challenged by it, then you will exert maximum energy. But in the excitement, the pain of fatigue dissipates and the exuberance of what you hope to achieve overcomes the weariness. Unquote. Our research shows that multipliers make challenges both provocative and plausible, attracting others to join them and offer their full capability, both intellectually and emotionally. Their approach generates the collective will and stretch needed to undertake most paramount of challenges. What is this like for people who are willing to sign up? It is exhilarating, exhausting, challenging, gratifying. This means that multipliers get contributions from their people that far surpass what they thought they had to give, and it is this co-commitment exhilaration that makes people sign up again and again. The multiplier formula. The know-it-all versus the challenger. Know-it-alls. They give directions that showcase how much they know. As a result, they limit what their organization can achieve to what they themselves know how to do. The organization uses energy to deduce what the boss thinks. Challengers. They define opportunities that challenge people to go beyond what they know how to do. As a result, they get organizations that understand the challenge and has the focus and energy to take it on. The three practices of the challenger. 1. Seed the opportunity. Show the need. Challenge assumptions. Reframe problems. Create a starting point. 2. Lay down a challenge. Extend a concrete challenge. Ask the hard questions. Let others fill in the blanks. 3. Generate belief in what is possible. Lay out a path. Co-create the plan. Orchestrate an early win. Becoming a challenger. Ask leading questions. Take bus trips. Take a massive baby step. Unexpected findings. Even when leaders have a clear view of the future, there are advantages to simply seeding the opportunities. Challengers have a full range of motion. They can see and articulate the big thinking and ask the big questions. But they can also connect the two specific steps needed to create movement in the right direction. If you ask people to take on the impossible in the right way, it can actually create more safety than if you ask something easier.
You are listening to CJSF 90.1 FM on your dial, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby, and you are listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenery, Instructor of Future Studies at Simon Fraser University. We're now going to take a short break and listen to a very important public service announcement.
With thousands of homeless animals entering SPCA shelters each year, pet overpopulation is a serious problem in BC, but it's one you can help prevent. Spay or neuter your companion animal today. From our perspective, every homeless animal on our streets or in our shelters is one too many. For more information on spaying and neutering initiatives, visit the BC SPCA website at www.spca.bc.ca.
Welcome back. You're listening to CJSF, 90.1 FM, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. And you are listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenari, professional futurist.
Welcome back. We are looking at the book Multipliers, How the Best Leaders Make Everyone Smarter by Liz Wiseman with Greg McKinnon and a foreword by Stephen R. Covey. We're now looking at Chapter 5, The Debate Maker. It is better to debate a decision without settling it than settling a decision without debating it. Joseph Joubert. How leaders make decisions is profoundly influenced by how they engage and leverage the resources around them. Our research has shown that diminishers tend to make decisions solo or with small inner circles. As a result, they not only underutilize the intelligence of those around them, but they also leave the organization spinning instead of executing. Multipliers make decisions by first engaging people in debate, not only to achieve sound decisions, but also to develop collective intelligence and to ready their organizations to execute. Jonathan Akers illustrated the difference between the two approaches when he drove a high-stakes decision at a multinational software company. Jonathan had recently landed a global role as vice president in corporate planning and was eager to make an impact on the business. The company was entangled in a competitive contest over ownership of the mid-market space. Their largest competitor dominated the small business market, while they owned the enterprise data space. In search of market control and revenue growth, the company began moving down market while the competitor was moving up. Winning the mid-market was symbolically important, but it would take an entirely new business model to actually get there. Jonathan had been asked to lead the development of a new pricing model to enable them to penetrate the market. It was just the opportunity he needed to deliver a tangible success. Eager to get it right on an issue of such strategic importance, Jonathan assembled a team with all the right players, including a broad coalition of leaders from product, marketing, services, and business practices, many of whom had deep understanding of mid-market spaces. The group came together in a large conference room on the top floor of their sleek headquarters in Silicon Valley. Jonathan sat at the head of the narrow table. He began the conversation by laying out the challenge to the group, teeing up the issues, turning on the heat for the work and the task force that was confronting them. He made it clear that the CEO and other top lieutenants of the company were expecting significant progress in this mid-market. Driven by a high-stakes mandate, people began compiling data and analysis and submitted it to Jonathan over the course of several weeks. The task force had just been set in motion, but already it was beginning to spin with confusion. Jonathan had left unclear the role of the task force members would play and how the recommendations and decisions would actually get made. Instead of using the brain power inherent in the task force, Jonathan used the task force as an audience for his own ideas. He consumed most of the time of the task force meeting over-articulating his own biases or dropping names. Although he gathered data from each task force member quite tenaciously, none of this information was shared or discussed with the task force meetings. There was plenty of data gathered, but there was simply no debate. The meetings atrophied into opinion-based conversation, mostly Jonathan's. One task force member shared his frustration. "I came to these meetings hoping to hear from his brain trust we assembled, but all I heard was Jonathan's point of view, again and again." Although people were led to believe they would be a critical part of the decision, they quickly realized that the task force wasn't where the decision would be made, or even where it would be recommended, nor was it a forum for debate, where the individual or collective thinking would be challenged. It appeared that the decision would be made by a select few behind closed doors. The suspicions turned out to be true. Nothing much came of their work. but they did eventually receive a sudden email from Jonathan with the subject line, quote, announcement of new pricing model, unquote, and knew the decision had been made without them. Instead of generating collective understanding and optimism about the mid-market, Jonathan generated disillusionment about the company's prospects for winning in this market, and he personally earned a reputation as a time waster. The immediate impact was apparent the next time Jonathan called a task force meeting. Every other chair around the huge conference room was empty. But the more far-reaching result was that the company continued to stall in the mid-market while their competitors gained traction and market there. This is a story played out far beyond the top-floor conference room. It is repeated because while many leaders like Jonathan attempt the management practice of inclusion and discussion, they're still operating with an elitist view of intelligence, believing the brain power for the organization sits only with a selected few. They lack a rich view of intelligence in which there are many sources of insight waiting to be more fully utilized and where intelligence actually develops through engagement and challenge. A leader's ability to garner the full intelligence of the organization depends on some of his or her most deeply held assumptions. In the next show, we're going to be looking at the decision maker versus the debate maker. I'll just give a brief introduction to that, and then we'll continue to go in more detail in the next show. Mind of the multiplier. Diminishers like Jonathan seem to hold an assumption that there are only a few people worth listening to. Sometimes they state that thought out loud, but the executive who admitted it to listening to only to one or two people from his 4,000-person organization. But typically, such executives manifest their assumptions in more subtle ways. They ask the direct reports to interview candidates for an open position, but they end up hiring the position the person their star employee favors. They say they have an open-door policy, but seem to spend a lot of time in closed-door meetings with one or two highly influential advisors. They might patronize people by asking for their opinion, but when it comes down to the high-stakes decisions, they make them privately and announce them to the organization as a fait accompli. Multipliers hold a very different view. They don't focus on what they know, but on how to know what others know. They seem to assume that without enough minds, we can figure it out. They are interested in every relevant insight people can offer, like the executive who even late at night, after a 12-hour debate, insisted the team listen to one more comment from a junior member of the group. The comment turned out to be the critical insight necessary for solving the question at hand. It's no surprise that multipliers approach decisions by bringing people together, discovering what they know, and encouraging people to challenge and stretch each other's thinking through the collective dialogue and public debate. So we're going to be looking at this in more detail in the upcoming shows, so please stay tuned.
You have been listening to Future Talk on CJSF 90.1 FM on your dial, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby, and Future Talk is a weekly show on important issues that affect you and your future. And this is Dr. Teneri, professional futurist, reminding you that if you're not willing to make the effort to invent your own future, then others will be only too happy to invent it for you. See you next week.
CJSF Radio, Simon Fraser, 90.1 FM.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, British Columbia.